Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to Focus on the Upstate, a pre-recorded production dedicated to informing you about organizations that serve our community and how you can get involved with them. Here's your host, Matthew Causey.
Good morning and welcome to Focus on the Upstate. I'm your host, Matthew Causey. Today we have special guest Maya Pack, the Executive Director of the South Carolina Institute of Medicine and Public Health. Welcome to the program.
So nice to be with you, Matthew. Thank you.
Oh, definitely. So tell me a little bit about the Institute of Medicine and Public Health. I know when people think about medical institutes in South Carolina, they probably think about DHEC. So what is the main key defining differences between the two organizations and what do y'all do?
Sure. So it's my 15-year anniversary working for the organization. And we received our 501c3 status as a nonprofit organization back in 2011. And I was part of a organization within the Arnold School of Public Health at the University of South Carolina that formed a couple years earlier and served as a liaison to the existing organization. But to tell you a little bit about the Institute of Medicine and Public Health, we are a nonprofit and nonpartisan organization working to inform policy within our state to improve health outcomes. And so we do work very closely with DHEC and other state agencies, but our role is unique in that we are independent and not part of the government structure. And so we benefit from a really neutral identity, and that helps us to be able to serve as a convener of all sorts of different organizations trying to work towards common solutions and consensus-based solutions to some of our state's most pressing public health challenges.
So I'd like to look as well a little bit about what actually brought you here. So you talked a little bit about some of the things that the organization does and what y'all do over there. So what about that really enticed you to want to come and be a part of that this organization?
Sure. So prior to coming to the Institute of Medicine and Public Health, in my background, I'd worked with nonprofit organizations, actually from the Greenville area, and worked there for most of my career. It also served for two hospital systems, both Prisma and Bon Secours St. Francis, in different roles. And part of my experience in working in the acute care setting and taking care of patients and planning the services that would help patients was thinking about the context in which that those services are delivered and that patients seek medical care when they're sick. And so part of me was always interested in looking at what we could do as a state and also as a community to help people stay healthier and keep them out of the hospital. And so that's what public health is really about. You know, it's about prevention. It's about promoting environments that are safe for our communities and where people can live and work and be healthy.
Oh, definitely. So you mentioned as well a bit about some of the things that your organization does, that the Institute does. What kinds of things specifically have y'all managed to do? I mean, a quick look at your website shows y'all have been very busy over the years, but what kinds of specific things have y'all been able to do over your last 15 years there?
Sure. So there's a few different things that we do in order to work towards our mission of informing policy to improve health and healthcare in South Carolina. And one of the first programs we created was the Health Policy Fellows Program. And I was lucky enough to have a part in creating this program for IMPH. And the idea was to provide direct education to policymakers in our state legislature. And we have elected officials who have all sorts of different backgrounds, and they're expected to be experts on everything and come, write policy and vote on policy on a wide variety of topics. And so this program was born out of the idea that we could support the education and information gathering for policymakers so that they had the information they need in order to make good health policy decisions that would help our state become healthier. And so we launched that program back in 2013, and we've had over 70 legislators participate in it over the years. And each time that we have a group of legislators in this class, we get to work with them and identify specific issues that they want to affect in their role as legislators as it relates to health and health policy. And so just for example, this past year, the group of legislators asked us to dig a little deeper into two specific issues. One of them was around the Interstate Medical Compact and the fact that our state is not part of that compact yet. The idea being that physicians can work across state lines more effectively if they're part of this compact. And that could increase access to care for people who need medical care. And so we did a deep dive into that. And then we also did a deep dive into housing issues, specifically mold remediation for renters, because our state has some of the most landlord-friendly policies in the country, and there are too many instances of families who have mold in their rental homes, and the landlord is not remediating the problem. And so we brought in folks from medical legal partnerships across the state, both the one in Greenville at the Institute for Community Health Improvement and the one in Columbia, CHAMPS, that's part of the USC School of Law. And they taught us about the policies that they are working towards to improve access for families to rental housing that is mold free, because mold can cause so many different types of health issues. And sometimes you don't.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Even see that it's there.
So is a program like this, how unique is this to South Carolina? Did y'all model this off of anywhere else or anything like that? Any inspiration there? Or is this something that's fairly unique to South Carolina?
So that's such an interesting question, because when we were designing this program, we did talk to a couple of other states that had similar type of programs. One was in Georgia, one was in Colorado, and one was in Kansas. And each of the organizations in those states had gone about the education of legislators about health policy in different ways. And so we took ideas from each of those states, and we also had conversations and meetings with legislators in our state house to see what their needs were, what were their information needs, and what kind of format and information would be most helpful to them in terms of enhancing their ability to, do health policy in a more informed way with the evidence. And so that resulted in the creation of this program. And then over the years, we've tweaked it and updated it as time goes by, because obviously different public health issues become priority issues over time. In 2021, for example, we talked a lot about the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic and all the related kind of social determinants of health issues that were revealed during the pandemic, when people did not have, access to food and housing and that those other types of things, when the economy was going through a difficult time. And so we try to teach and talk about and discuss the health related policies in terms of access to care and the function of the medical care system in our state. But we also really focus a lot on the environments in which people live that allow them to make healthy choices and be the healthiest that they can as individuals and families and communities.
And I think I saw that y'all have a rural version of this program as well. Why is it important to have a separate version of this program for rural areas?
Yeah, so Matthew, after working at the state level for a number of years, we were approached by our partner organization, the South Carolina Office of Rural Health, and they partnered with us to design a county level adaptation of the Health Policy Fellows Program. And we chose 6 rural counties in our state based on high levels of need, both related to healthcare outcomes as well as the social determinants of health. And we have visited each of these 6 communities over the past couple of years to bring together their elected officials from the state, county, and city or town level, as well as the county administrators and city managers, along with members of community coalitions that have been formed to improve health and well-being for the communities. And so in many cases, that was the first time that those groups of people had been brought to the same table. And so hearing from the community coalitions about what their priority issues are in terms of community health improvement, and reflecting on what the influence of county and town policy could have on local health outcomes, which is tremendous. It's a whole different set of policy opportunities that exists on that level as compared to the state level. And so that program has been extremely successful. We're currently working with each of those six communities to identify a specific health policy opportunity and provide some technical assistance to them about how to go about changing policy at the local level.
That's wonderful. Well, your website is absolutely flush with studies and reports that y'all have done over the years. So could you tell me a little bit about what the process is for in producing those different studies and reports and what kind of work goes into that?
Sure. Well, it's a lot of work, and we are a small but mighty team of six people. And so everything we do relies on our collaborative partners across the state. We do almost no work in isolation from other organizations. And so for some of our more intense processes that we usually call task forces, we bring together subject matter experts and people with lived experience from across the state. We provide, a forum that is neutral and nonpartisan for debate and conversation about some common sense ways of approaching these different health issues through policy and programs at the state and local level. And these processes often result in an agenda for the state of what the steps are that need to be taken to really improve our state's healthcare system. And I'll give you a couple of examples. When the Institute of Medicine and Public Health was first formed back in 2011, we quickly identified two specific service systems in our state that needed our attention. One of those was the long-term care system in our state that cares for the aging population as well as people with disabilities. And we convened a task force on that topic. And really, the result of that was, well, there are many results, but one of the main results was a movement to rebalance the investment that our state was making in community and home-based care as opposed to institutional care. Because we know that most people, when given a choice, want to age in place. They want to stay in their homes as long as possible. And so that work that was initiated back in 2013 or so, we continue to convene and connect state leaders on those issues. And we have what we call the Long-Term Care Leadership Council that we convene quarterly to continue to make progress on making a stronger system for long-term care, especially with the aging of our population. It's really important that our state be prepared to take care of the aging population.
If your day sounds like,
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through, you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
A second area we chose to focus on right from the very beginning is the behavioral health system of care in our state, which has grown tremendously over the last few years as more and more state level investment gets made into the behavioral health service system. And so when we first published on the needs in the behavioral health system back in 2015, we focused on accessible outpatient services, The availability of mobile crisis services, so mental health professionals that can come to a person who's experiencing crisis, and also crisis stabilization units where people can go if they're having a behavioral health emergency, and that gives them an option other than the emergency room, which is not the appropriate care setting for people experiencing a behavioral health emergency. And so those services have all been really a priority in recent years of the governor and the state agencies responsible for paying for and delivering that type of care. And so we're eagerly awaiting the publication of the state's Behavioral Health Master Plan, which the Department of Health and Human Services has been working on for a bit and is expected to be published in April, which will lay out the plans for the specifics on expanding behavioral health services across the state so that every community has the continuum of care that its residents need.
So with that plan that's being set up together, I know since y'all have been doing so much work in researching and this topic, what kinds of things are you hoping to see in that plan that would be beneficial for the state?
Sure. So really what our original work proposed and what we continue to promote is the idea of a continuum of care. So just like in medical treatment, where you have access to outpatient services, all the kinds of services needed to keep you healthy and help you when you're not healthy through inpatient care, that we see that same continuum of care for behavioral health. And so starting with prevention to make sure that substance use disorders and mental health impairments are prevented to the degree they can be and that people are educated on it, all the way through outpatient care to intensive outpatient treatment, partial hospitalization, and inpatient care. And, you know, one of the themes of our work has been promoting deinstitutionalization. And so we know that sometimes people have to be in a hospital setting, but if there are adequate outpatient supports and continuum of care, then the hope is to prevent people from being institutionalized. The other kind of key piece of this is helping to keep people, both children and adults, out of our state's emergency departments when they're having a behavioral health crisis, because our emergency departments are really set up for physical health care and trauma, and the folks working in the emergency departments are typically not equipped to or trained to handle behavioral health crisis. And so creating other places, these crisis stabilization units, where people can go to be stabilized apart from the hospital emergency room is an ideal setup.
So I know within these topics, one of the things that y'all have looked at specifically is in regards to social isolation amongst older adults. So what kinds of issues were y'all seeing in this subject that led y'all to focus on that? And what do you think seems to be causing some of it?
Well, what we uncovered in that work is that a lot of older adults have been living in socially isolated manner for many years. And during the early days of the pandemic, when many of us, you know, were asked to stay at home for a period of time, I think we all got to experience a little bit of social isolation there. And so I think it got more folks thinking about the people who live in that way, where they're by themselves day after day and year after year. And older adults are more susceptible to this because as they age, maybe their spouse passes away, maybe they, you know, become, their eyesight becomes poor and they're no longer able to drive and get places by themselves. And so we did an examination of the older adult population and found that not only are there negative consequences of social isolation for one's mental health, but also for one's physical health. And we worked with a researcher, a national researcher, whose work identified that isolation can have the same negative impact on your physical health as smoking 15 cigarettes a day. And so when you think about the public health messaging that has gone out for years and years around smoking and tobacco use, it's really jarring to think about the fact that social isolation could have a similar impact, yet it's a factor that isn't often discussed. And so we published a report along with our partners at the Department on Aging about ways our state can help our older adult population have access to services and social opportunities to lessen this isolation as a way to improve overall health and also, of course, control healthcare spending.
So I know that the focus on that was mostly on older adults' isolation issues, but I know COVID was affecting everybody. Were you seeing any similar isolation-related health issues in the general population outside of just older adults as well, or was this mostly centered around that population?
So this study was centered around older adults, but we know for sure that COVID, especially for school-aged youth, had a really negative impact on mental health when students and children were isolated and separated. And so we actually have also done some work around pandemic preparedness at the state level. And one of the recommendations of that work was to really not close schools. Now, obviously, there are some students who are, you know, susceptible to viruses and contagions that, you know, have critical health conditions that we want to keep them away. But for most young people, there are strategies that can be taken to limit the spread of the virus. And many of the experts we convened felt like the negative mental health consequences of the isolation were worse than the potential spread of the virus. And so, again, it's a trade-off, but it's something that I think, you know, everybody in the world was learning at the same time of, you know, how to balance the risk with, you know, maintaining normalcy. And I think that, you know, many kids who are isolated and, you know, doing remote school experience social isolation. I know there's also a lot written about the impact of social media on isolation and the irony being that it's meant for social connection, but can sometimes have the opposite effect on folks.
Well, with all the resources that y'all have available, what kinds of things do y'all have available for the public to learn more from, and where can they go to access some of that information?
Sure. So our website is imph.org, and we have on there publications in a number of different health topics. And we also have a newsletter if you want to keep up with the latest things that we're working on. If on our homepage, you can hit stay connected or get connected and sign up for that. And then you'll get emails occasionally from us, not too often. And then we also have the our email address, info@imph.org, for anyone who needs more information about a particular topic they see on our website.
Awesome. Well, is there anything else we haven't touched on you think is worth adding?
We also have social media. So anyone out there interested in health policy and health improvement for our state, check us out on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter.
I think it's X now, but I still call it Twitter as well.
Yeah, I'm slow to change.
Oh, I feel that. Well, thank you again so much for coming on, and I wish you all the absolute best in your organization's continued efforts.
Thank you so much, Matthew. I really appreciate it.
Oh, definitely. This has been Focus on the Upstate. I'm Matthew Causey, and I'll see you all again next week.
Thank you for listening to Focus on the Upstate with Matthew Causey. If you'd like more information on today's topic, email focusontheupstate@odyssey.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
All-star closer Kenley Jansen, we have a question.
What's the best podcast of all time?
Baseball isn't boring, baby.
I'm Rob Bradford, and every single day I'm sitting down with the biggest names to show you this great game is the greatest game. It's my podcast. It's my passion. It's a cause I started more than 2 years ago and is now the most prolific national daily baseball pod there is. Another fact, so jump aboard the BIB Express. Follow and listen to Baseball Isn't Boring, presented by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.